You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.
Today on our show, we're talking with Peggy Cyphers. Peggy, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Brainerd, for inviting me. I'm very excited to be speaking with you this morning.
Let's talk about what's happening in your studio now. What are you working on or preparing for in any sphere?
Yeah.
And I know we're going to talk about curatorial projects and your visual art, but I'm thinking, imagine visual
yeah.
art now.
Well, I just finished a show up at the Cross Contemporary. It's in Socrates, New York. So that was an exhibition that I had planned for about a year and incorporated some kind of new pieces that I'm working with cyanotypes. And in my whole repertoire of working with works on paper, I've always kind of appropriated from early naturalists. So in this series, I actually wound up going to out to Iowa and kind of researched a lot of the very early, you know, specimens of from the herbarium at Grinnell University of the plants from the prairie. So I'm doing like a project that has an environmental kind of emphasis to it. It's called Prairie Conversation. So it sort of it documents in a way this conversation between early naturalists and myself, because I consider myself as an artist, someone that's very involved with nature, looking at how we're kind of appropriating from that in my work. And also just how, you know, the environment is being challenged right now, and it's been challenged for a couple hundred years. So the series incorporates even plants that have been, you know, chosen by these people, these you know, just individuals, like 150 years ago. So the images are montages working with other kinds of appropriated images and then things that I create myself. So other than that, of that series, I also have my...
Well, let me
yeah.
stop you for a minute before you go
yeah.
to the other series. Cyanotype,
yeah.
so you're making those with, as I remember cyanotype making, you're making it with a sun, or how does that process
exactly.
work?
Exactly. They're one of the earliest forms of photography, and so... the way that they're done is with a chemical process, which is non-toxic, and the only thing that exposes them is sunlight, which is UV rays. So it's kind of like also an expression of this kind of whole ecological theme that I work with in my abstraction as well. So the process...
You know, that fits in nicely. I see that. And you make the paper yourself? Like, you coat the paper?
Exactly. Because some of the, you know, the largest piece I've done so far is about, like, I guess it's about 50 by 40. But they can get extremely, I can go any scale with these. So it's a very exciting new series for me, because I used to do a lot of monoprinting in New York City with different printmakers, and this, like, enables me to do my printmaking in the studio and outside.
Right, and outside,
yeah.
you can make it huge if you wanted, because you can coat, I guess, the paper any size, really.
Yeah, I mean, it requires
that's a lot of...
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I'm getting a lot of, you know, it's been fun working with that new series. It kind of gets me into a new environment out of the studio, and, you know, my studio right now is in... Go ahead, what are you going to say?
You were talking about, I do want to know where your studio is, but you were going to talk about another project that you were working on before I interrupted
right.
you about cyanotypes.
Well, I'm really am a studio artist in the sense that I love that kind of concentrated energy of that sort of, and that one-on-one with my environment in the studio. My studio right now is still in downtown Manhattan. I'm really fortunate to have amazing space there. So my painting series has been called Animal Spirits for about 8 years. And that is a series that I started after I went to on a residency in outside of Beijing, Songjiang, in 2008. And it was kind of, you know, I really needed to get out of the city. I had been struggling with my work for a few years because I had been so impacted by 9/11. I was very close to it, and it was just psychologically very stressful. So it was great to kind of go to China and have this experience. And I have always been involved with the processes of, you know, kind of Chinese landscape painting and this sort of space, this sort of infinite space, and the mark, you know, the trace, the element of the hand of the artist. So kind of playing against automatic writing in surrealism, my work involves a very kind of structured process, even though they look like images that kind of have a sort of landscape sense to them. They're really done with a kind of complete abandon to an image evolving. So I call them channelings. That's why I call them animal spirits, because they're kind of to me they're a lot of them have to do with you know, that series was kind of playing upon imagery or thought processes of like predatory birds or creatures that have been on the planet since you know, prehistoric times.
Right, but also the words channeling and animal spirits sound, you know, almost shamanistic. That there's that you know, you're talking about the kind of formal elements, but both of those things sound. What do those mean? Without
exactly.
me reading into it.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Like the formal element is the structure. I've always worked with the structure, either like a grid structure. My early work with animal imageries with grids of birds and endangered species. And this series, I almost like I feel like I have like a very strong activism emphasis in my life based on like animals, so creatures and the environment. So I'm kind of an activist in that sense as well. And so I think of them as channelings from other beings, or even, you know, this idea of Buddhist idea, or it's a kind of a universal idea of interconnectedness of all like structures or living creatures on the planet. So that's the sense of channeling. So even now with the new, you know, this kind of notion of the singularity, which is this, you know, we're at this huge upward shift in technology, which is just going straight up. And it's kind of, you know, been kind of, it's been happening for the last 20 years. But I guess they say, you know, in the book, the singularity is near, that it's going to continue till like 2045. When, you know, how we it's the internet and how connections between the whole universe are being affected by technology and the thought process of humans. So I'm kind of playing with scientific ideas, shamanistic ideas, and then, of course, being a painter, I'm a foremost too. So it's a lot of things to kind of meld together in my work.
Well, it is, and that almost sounds like, I mean, you talked about a universal experience, and I'm on board with all of that. You know, to me, it also sounds like a religious experience, right? I mean, that's not a word like anybody likes to use, because it sounds like we're talking about the church or something, but I don't mean organized religion. I mean, you know, like epiphanies, this kind of interconnectedness you're talking about with everything. That is a type of, I don't know what the word is, but a type of, like, post-activism, right? It's activism about a way of looking at the future as opposed to civil rights or, you know,
exactly. Stopping
a pig from being slaughtered or something. I don't know what the word for that is, but it's a different kind of activism. So it does have this element of, I don't know, I hate to use the word spirituality, but something like that. That's a common goal that everyone's reaching for that isn't just formal. It's a way of thinking of being, of changing the world in your mind, sort of. Or am I reaching
too
much?
I love that. Yeah, exactly. The way you said it is perfect. I mean, when I moved to New York, I became, you know, obsessed with, like, the writings of Charles Darwin. And this was no accident, because I grew up in, you know, going to the Chesapeake Bay in Maryland. And there's these it's a huge, like, Miocene fossil deposit area with these cliffs. And so, you know, from the moment I was a baby, I was exposed to the idea that, you know, geological time is this enormous expanse and we're just this little kind of blip in it, you know, and that 99.9% of all the species that have ever existed on the planet are now extinct. So, you know, there's
where did you grow up? I'm sorry, I was trying to interrupt,
but
where was that exactly? That's really interesting.
Well, it's down near Washington, D.C. I grew up in Baltimore and Chesapeake Beach, Maryland. But
and what does it look like around there? There's a lot of rocks, or I mean, I'm sorry.
It's actually a geological formation. It's cliffs, but they're clay, and they were formed by the polar ice caps when they melted after the ice age. So it's this enormous kind of carving in. So when you walk down the beach, you've got these clay cliffs and fossils are falling out. So every morning you go down and, you know, you walk down the beach and you're finding, you know, fossilized shark's teeth. It's a Miocene deposit, so it's 20 million years old. But, you know, it's just this kind of thinking was how I became who I am as an artist. And so when I got to New York, I spent a lot of time at the Pratt Library where I went to grad school. And got really involved with Darwin. I thought he was such a mystical, you know, when you really read his stuff, he's just this mystical person who's kind of trying to find out, you know,
who is Darwin? Who are you
Charles
talking about?
Charles Darwin. So he says like the idea of evolution did not negate the concept of a higher being, a higher power. So I guess maybe this is something I'm still. This is definitely an underpinning in all my work and all my kind of thinking processes. So, yeah.
And what happened after that? So there was that early experience, you know, which is really interesting to me because I grew up with a mother that was incredibly enthusiastic about geology and actually an early childhood educator on top of it. And I never quite got it, you know, but it's fascinating. Everybody absorbs things differently. So then, what happened next for you in college? Were you still doing both before Pratt in New York?
Well, when I moved to New York, I came to do my grad work at Pratt, and I wound up staying. And about a year after I wound up moving to the East Village, and that was just like I was there at the pinnacle. You know, I moved there in '83 and started. You know, it was my first one-person show. I had a storefront on Avenue B and 10th Street, and that's where I lived and worked, and just became, you know, totally immersed in that fantastic.
So what was it like then? I mean, just to interrupt you there, I lived on 10th between A and 1st for a while, but that was in the early 90s. In the 80s, that was kind of a special time right there. Right, that was sort of, there was a number of galleries there that were great, and a lot of interesting artists,
incredible.
David Wojnarowicz.
Yeah, I mean, we showed at the same gallery, we showed at Ground Zero. Well, what had happened was when I was still in grad school, I was kind of savvy, I really needed to get a job, so I started working at Sonnabend Gallery for Ileana Sonnabend, and then I started working at John Weber Gallery, so I was immersed in the kind of Soho scene in the late 70s, early 80s. But then,
and wait,
you know,
I'm sorry to interrupt, but what were you doing at those galleries? You were at the...
I became the associate director of the John Weber Gallery during that point in time, and I was, you know, just helping with the shows, and it was just like my full-time job. But then I left,
right.
And I started working for Lucio Pozzi and his new observations
magazine. His publication,
magazine.
Right.
Yeah, for the publication. And then I started writing art reviews for Barry Schwabsky at Arts Magazine and started showing my work in the East Village. I got a really good start on my career because everybody was flurrying around. I mean, my first show, you know, I got like an art forum review. But you just got everything because it was brand new.
But you also had a literary involvement right away with Lucio Pazzi, you know, and that kind of thing. That was a very kind of intellectual involvement right away that had to do with writing as opposed to just showing work, which, you know, of course is your career.
Exactly. Well, it was somewhat calculated too because I had to support myself. So I was like, okay, well, I want to get a teaching job. So start writing. I thought, okay, I'm a good writer. I love writing. So I started writing and getting involved in that. I like minored in philosophy. So I love that world as well. So when I was, when I wasn't working full time, then I started kind of supplementing things with showing, and then I started teaching. I was teaching a little bit at three or four schools in New York, and now I'm just teaching at Pratt, but I'm teaching at NYU for a while and Parsons a little bit. So, and then I really had a really good run with a lot of good shows in the 80s. And I was working with silk screens and these, like I said earlier, grids of images of species, different endangered species, and working with a lot of texture and sand on those. And then, from there, I moved my studio over to Lower Manhattan, and then eventually 9/11 happened, and that kind of was like the sort of like a transitional time for me because it was it's just like the art world kind of stopped for a bit.
Right, and so it suddenly seemed, I think, for a lot of people impossible to make art. Like, what do you make art about? You know, anything about 9/11 seemed sort of like cheap and awful and, you know, but everybody was affected by it, and every artist wanted to make something about it, too, I think, as I remember, because I was in New York then, too, working.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I remember thinking that, you know, of all the shows that were around there, I mean, some shows were 9/11. I don't know if you remember at, I forgot what the space was on 19th, but they had a show of an artist that was showing a time-lapse video of looking at Manhattan from Brooklyn, and it happened during 9/11. I mean, that was.
That was crazy. Well, I do have some paintings that I had started right around that time, and then I'm sort of saving them. I haven't really shown it as a group, but eventually I will. So
that was a pivotal time for you. You were saying in terms of how you were looking at your work too. What happened after that?
Yeah, I think so because. I mean, it was just impossible to get that, to let go of that for a bit. So it derailed some of my earlier thinking processes. And then I became just, really just focusing again back on my kind of this Buddhist idea, the interconnectedness of species and this much more of a foremost element to my work. And when I was in China, there's they just called it one of the worst man-made environmental disasters, which was Three Gorges Dam. And so I did some paintings based on that. But this is a little tough. These are tough subjects. So I think if I have to work with something like that, because that's important to me as an artist, I do it, regardless of if it affects a marketability or something like that. But interestingly enough, a lot of my animal spirits pieces have been some of my most saleable work. So it doesn't, I think people are can take hard subjects sometimes and it depends, it depends on what type of dealer you're working with, or if you're selling them yourself. So.
Well, of course, and there's also an activist element to, to what you're doing, which makes me also just wanted to ask, are there other, with activists about a certain cause, and you have a consistent way of thinking about, the world or our interaction with it and the future of all these species. Are there other people like you in a group that you
meet online or know of? Do you know what I mean? Or are you kind of a lone activist?
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? Like if there's activists
yeah.
who want to stop PETA, we all sign the same, you know, petition or something.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, it's almost kind of like I don't like to look at my emails sometimes because there's always some animal that I'm going to, you know, like, fight for this animal, this person's suffering. So I don't know how to deal with that emotionally.
That's not your world. That's what I'm saying. But is there a world that is yours that is more like other people doing things kind of like this?
I don't think so, really. Because, I mean, I'm really like an abstract. I mean, I'm a conceptual artist, abstract paint. I'm a painter. And activism is, it's like a whole another level. And my son is in Seattle. He has a radio show. He's working for all kinds of civil rights for people in the environment out there. And, you know, he's a writer and activist. But fine, it's great that he's doing that. But I can't take that on. My language is in the arts. And I love that. I love expressing something that's like bringing somebody to a kind of stillness or silence and having them have an experience through looking at my painting that could perhaps reawaken something in them or challenge some of their thinking. And, you know, I think for me, too, is, like, I've always had this idea, it's kind of a crazy idea, too, that, like, animals communicate with me, so they talk to me, or, like, they, you know, I have this psychic kind of energy with them. And it sounds strange, but it doesn't.
That's what I was trying to get at before. I intuited that before, but was trying to figure out. But we were talking about formal things. But, yeah, tell me about that. But I'm fine with
that.
I'm on board.
Well, that's why when I started the series that was based on predatory birds, it seemed like everywhere I would go, they would be following me. They would, even in the city, I'd look up, there'd be a hawk. Or I'd go to the country, there'd be eagles flying over. And, you know, I thought about that and,
but you're talking
about
a psychic connection to them, and you can really tell me anything. I'm totally open to that. But you're saying you felt you had the dialogue with the birds. I mean, I just read a Tesla biography. He was brilliant to that very end, by the way, and didn't die penniless. But he was talking to pigeons in a really intense way. And that's not
who's
when
that?
He was like Nikola Tesla.
Oh, wow.
Nikola Tesla, you know, was inventor of like a bazillion things, and,
including the radio.
But he had an amazing, you know, he thought of it as dying penniless and being a mad scientist, and he was neither. He lived in the New Yorker till he was dead, but was a little more eccentric and began talking with birds and taking care of pigeons in the New Yorker room. And there was one pigeon, he felt that he was totally communicating with them all the time, you know, very intense. And that there was one that he was actually in love with. And he never seems to be celibate, never married. Nobody knows anything about him other than he seems to have never had a relationship in his life. But the pigeons at the end were sort of it, you know. Anyway, I digress, but just to give you an opening, so tell me what your experience is.
Yeah, so it's not so crazy to you that this is
exactly.
going on.
Exactly, that's what I'm trying to say.
So, like, you know, the thing, you know, when I was studying the writings of Darwin, Charles Darwin, he, you know, he did that whole, like, whole analysis of emotions in animals, and he was spot on that all creatures have this like desire to live and to be happy, and it's just we're all connected that way. Even, you know, rocks and plants, the whole planet is speaking together as one. So you know, and the thing that also I was inspired by him was that he started the first you know, he didn't believe in animal testing, and there was a lot of cruelty. So he started a lot of animal rights things in England, like anti-vivisection.
But who is that? That was
Charles Darwin.
Charles Darwin still. Okay, yeah. That's what
I thought. So I'm like just reflecting back on, you know, and also I grew up with, you know, a grandmother and a great aunt who were really activists because, you know, down at the Bay, there was a lot of, that was when they had first you know, launched like chemical fertilizers, you know, and all the eagles were dying. And so they were very involved with, even way back in the 30s and the 40s, trying to figure out how to preserve the lives of animals as humans took over. So, but for me personally, animals, I feel their pain a lot more. And I wish sometimes I didn't, you know.
Do you feel direct communication with them? I mean, in terms of psychic abilities, conversations, do you feel direct
in
dialogue?
I can actually do that pretty easily. Yeah, if an animal is sick, usually I have a few pets, and I can communicate with them, and I don't take my pets to vets hardly at all, but I can get them back on track and healthy. It's also part of what I like to think about. You know, I like to do kind of this psychic kind of healing thing. But
That is shamanistic, and especially with, you know, animal spirits, plant life, the whole Gaia, that is really shamanistic, isn't it? You're communicating in ways that other people aren't or don't realize they are.
Yeah, they just have not made that part of their awareness. So I've always been like human being, I think of myself as overly sensitive, but it's, I guess, you know, I'm just listening a little bit differently to how things are moving through space, and yeah. And so,
and
I
in
put
general,
that,
what is the message that you're getting? I mean, and I love that. I'd like to be more of that, you know, kind of in touch with everything. What is the conversation that you're generally hearing? And I mean, psychically among all the interconnected species.
Well, that we don't have to, like, we don't have to destroy each other or be cruel to each other to have this. I mean, there is an evolution. We're going to all, you know, in our biological bodies, we're still connected to this life-death cycle until technology can deal with that in another way. But that basically this interconnectedness is what will give us more peace, because we won't be always, like, fighting for something like this, you know, this kind of Cro-Magnon kind of, like, you know, just, like, hoarding. You know, if we just kind of mellow out a little bit and calm down and think about how we're all interconnected and the whole planet is, or the whole universe is very balanced, I guess it's just not to cause suffering to other creatures. And I think, you know, we're just trying to figure that out with humans, and we've been kind of doing that with each other as human beings for a long time. And, you know, it's really exciting to me to see the evolution of how we're dealing with gender issues and, you know, racial issues. It's the same thing. You know, if you're going to, you know, think it's funny to put, you know, to do something cruel to an animal, you're probably going to be okay with doing it to another human being. So I guess the message is that animals and nature are also how we keep a real kind of, like, that's how we find joy in life. That's the peace of our inner being. So if we can connect with our own inner being, then we can connect with the inner being of everything, living and non-living beings too. Like, I mean, in Buddhism, they really believe that even, like, rocks have a spirit. Like, the whole geological formation is a spirit. So sometimes when I pick up a fossil, I almost feel like that I can feel the energy of the shark. So if I think, you know, if I focus on it in a kind of meditative way. Yeah.
Peggy, it's really been a pleasure talking to you. In closing, can you tell me where people can see your work? Is there any upcoming shows? I know that one just came down, and your website will be on this post, so they can go to your website.
Okay.
But is there any where people should be looking?
Yeah, definitely. I'm penciling the dates penciled in. I'm having a show. It's going to be this fall in Lower East Side on Orchard Street at the Vanderplas Gallery. And, and also in August, I'm going to be a show at upstate in Athens, New York, at Shifting Ecologies show. Let's see. And I'm in the an alumni show at Pratt in September, a juried show. So those are the next couple things I have on my plate. A few other curatorial projects, but I don't have the exact dates penciled in. So,
okay, well we'll have links to all of those on the post.
Okay.
Peggy, thanks so much for talking with me today.
Thank
it's
you.
Really been a pleasure.
Great. Well, thank you, Brainers.
You're listening to Yale Radio WIBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.